Ziyandisokolisa, ezi zihlangu ndizithengelwe ngumama.
Love it.
Ziyandisokolisa, ezi zihlangu ndizithengelwe ngumama. Kodwa ndiyode ndifike, ndiyode ndifike mdaka mama. Kodwa ndiyode ndifike, ndiyode ndifike mdaka mama.
Hello and welcome to the Sincerely Sins podcast, hosted by myself, Cindy Somabondo, also known as Sins. Wow, thank you so much for listening to the podcast and setting time to do that. I had the beautiful honor of sitting down with Zolani Maola, now formerly known as the one who sings. Those of you who know the song Doobie Doo, I will know who I'm talking about. A wise and talented soul, really, whose amazing voice brings all the sweetest childhood memories for me. So we talked about it all, man. So please enjoy. Also, I'd love if you could leave your comments in the comment section, or you can just email me your thoughts on sincerelysinspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you once again and enjoy. So today I have the beautiful, amazing, kind-hearted Zolani Maola Klimp. Is that how I pronounce your name?
I can't believe you said my whole surname.
I saw it in the email and
hey,
I was
listen,
like...
That is my whole surname. I am a Maola Klimp.
Okay, love it. And you're known, now formerly known as the one who sings.
Yes.
But you're also a mother, you're also an actress. Mm. Whole-round artist is what I'd like to describe it as.
Fully.
How do you introduce yourself to the world?
Sure.
When you wake up, how do you say, okay, this is Zolani and this is who I am?
That's a really pertinent question, and I think that for me the answer to that question would be that my morning routine is to do with waking me up to myself as opposed to the world. So I've really been enjoying, particularly over the past year, meditating as one of the first things that I do in the morning.
Yes.
Because I feel like it really like sets me on course for like who I like intrinsically, authentically am before I'm a mother, before I'm an actress, before I'm a singer, everything, all of that stuff.
Yeah, I love that. Because I find, even if it's just 10 minutes of...
Totally.
Just quiet. Mm. It makes so much of a difference. Mm. And you just react differently to things.
I agree.
Yeah, yeah. So, affirmations, are you for? Because I read a lot of your captions and it's just affirmation after affirmation. It's just like, yes.
I love affirmations.
Yes, do you? Same, yeah.
I love affirmations.
Do you have, like, your regular morning affirmations that you wake up to?
I actually don't.
Okay.
I actually don't. But what I find is that when I do my meditations, I always am listening out for the message.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you know, when you're meditating, it's like, it's not like you're sitting there and there's like no thoughts.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just like trying to fight off the thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
That can be quite counterproductive. Like trying to fight the thoughts. So I try to be aware of them and just sort of let them go by. And then then every now and again, there are moments of stillness that happen. It's like when you shake up like one of those glass balls with like the snowflakes.
Yeah.
And then it like shakes. And then they all like come down and they start to settle. And then once that settling process has happened, I feel like there's usually a message.
Yeah.
That comes through for me, and it can be a word.
Yeah.
You know, today my word was, it was stillness and it was openness.
Okay.
Be still and be open.
Open. Don't you think it just correlates with what we're doing now? Because, you know, now.
Totally.
Yeah, because we're just in a moment where we're just going to be open and talking.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
And is this thing I read. There's this line I read in one of your captions. Yeah, I've been stalking you.
Good. I'm glad. Good research. Good.
You make mention of the statement emotional education and how we should all strive to seek that. Do you mind just
more about that? I can easily talk about that. You know, I came to a realization a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago, that I am kind of a little bit emotionally, I needed to educate myself because I didn't know what I was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Often I couldn't pinpoint the emotions that I was feeling, particularly if those emotions were not like the pleasant ones or the happy ones, the joyful ones.
Mm-hmm.
That's easy. That's very easy for me to identify. And I realized the reason why through a whole process of just self-investigation.
Yeah.
It's that when I was small, I didn't feel like I had the permission to feel everything that I felt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt as though if I felt something that was anger or confusion or the sticky emotions, you know, I couldn't express that. I felt like it wasn't safe for me to express those, that the adults in my life, whether actively or subconsciously, maybe they didn't even know, I got the message that it wasn't appropriate. And so it felt it was unsafe. So as I was growing up, I feel like I had quite a narrow spectrum of experiencing and reflecting my emotions. So what I would do then is that I would, whenever emotions came up that weren't permissible, I would numb them.
Mm.
You know, so I would numb them through watching a lot of TV, reading a lot of books, anything to escape my reality. And then, of course, later, you know, the escaping of reality, the stakes became higher. You know, then it became alcohol, intimacy, like physical contact without real intimacy, you know, in a way that was actually abusive and harmful.
I like how you make mention of how you escaped to books. Because when I listened to your first album with Freshly Ground, it was very...
Chica Chica? Or Nomvula?
Nomvula.
Because Chica Chica is actually our first album.
Yeah. I don't think a lot of us know that.
It's true. But that's fair.
Okay, so Nomvula, the album. A lot of Buttercup is like still my favorite. Literally, my friends
awesome.
Are like... Because awesome. It just takes me to a place I don't even know where it is, but it's just a beautiful, whimsical place.
Yes.
And, you know, as I listen to more of your songs, they just take you on a journey. And would you say that is influenced by your reading as a child?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I love story. I love other realities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love those journeys that you can go into simply by opening... She's just opening this body of papers.
Yeah.
You know, and bam, you are transported.
Yeah.
It's a magical thing.
It is.
It really is.
And I think you just deliver it so beautifully. Like.
Thank you.
And your voice, and it's just like, thank wow. You.
No, I love telling stories.
Yeah.
And I love, as you've pointed out, I love doing it through song.
Through song. Amazing. Mm. And so... You came to Cape Town. Why Cape Town? When you were
good Greece. Question.
So you came here just for context.
Yes.
You came here for varsity to learn to study drama and arts, right?
Absolutely.
Why Cape Town?
So I had initially wanted to go to Rhodes.
Makes sense.
I wanted to go to Rhodes because I came from Port Elizabeth, from PE, and I wanted to go to Rhodes because I already had, through the Grahamstown Festival and through going to Eisteddfod's and things in Grahamstown during my high school career to do, you know, public speaking or acting things, I'd come to be aware of the university there and that one of the best actors that this country's ever produced, and I think the world has produced, Andrew Buckland, was teaching there.
Mm.
And so I thought, I mean, obviously the place that I'm going to go to study acting is going to be Grahamstown. So I applied, and it, for some reason, it just didn't work out. I don't know. Maybe it was the paperwork. It was a lot of paperwork.
That essay. I think they want like 3 essays. Yeah, I was
so
like, I'm not doing that.
Paperwork.
Yep.
So then somebody suggested that I also just apply to UCT. And that hadn't occurred to me. It hadn't occurred to me to go so far away from home. But however it happened that I got to audition for UCT, physically audition, in Grahamstown. Mm. So I went and I did that, and it was a really great audition, and they gave me a bursary.
Wow.
And then I was going to Cape Town.
So you even got a bursary. That's amazing.
Even got a bursary. Yeah.
So what made you choose, what came to you to tell Kate, this is what you should be doing? Acting is your thing, singing is your thing. Because I was like, how did you discover your voice?
Mm.
Your voice is just amazing. I'm not stop saying how amazing your voice is.
Well, a funny thing about that is that I didn't think that was like so special.
Mm-hmm.
My main thing was my craft of acting, was theater making.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that I was very good on stage, acting. So what made me follow the acting was that was really the only thing, that and English and history. You know, I was good at those things. But the thing that really like made me special and shine was as an actress.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't an option. You know, you know when it's like super clear?
Yeah.
And there was nobody to be telling me, oh, you should be a doctor, you know, like there was nobody in my family who was telling me what to do. Which was great.
Yeah, it was like an advantage.
It is an advantage. It's a massive advantage.
Nobody's screaming in your ear.
No,
like,
nobody
what?
Was like being like, oh, no, Pete, do accounting because you're going to earn money. You know, my dad, I told my dad and he was like, oh, really? Acting? Okay.
Oh, that's so amazing.
yeah, I don't think that he even tried to talk me out of it. He supported me. And I went off. And then the singing happened really quite by the way. While I was at UCT in my first year of at Rez at Clarinus. I don't know if it's still called that now.
Clarinus.
What is it called now?
Clarinus.
Yeah.
Oh,
so when I was studying here in 2000, there was Clarendon and Clarinus.
Yeah, it's still there.
And Clarinus was the women's campus and women's whatever side, and Clarendon was the guys. So as I was singing in the hallway, one day this girl saw me, heard me, and she was like, oh, there's these guys on the guy side. They're looking for a singer for a band. And I went to go to the guy's room, and he was playing Skunk and Nancy, which is like this like ska, awesome outfit with this black lead singer called Skin, who was like my ultimate favorite, and he played one of their songs, and I sang to it, and he was like, cool, you got the job. So that was my first singing thing. That was the first time that I ever, so then I was part of that band for a little bit, but I wasn't really still taking it that seriously, so I got fired from that band, because I was a stoner, I was a serious stoner, and I didn't come to a few rehearsals, and I didn't come to a gig, and then they fired me, and I was like, fine, you know, it wasn't a thing anyway. And then about a year after that is when I was singing in a play at UCT. And a guy who was doing a drama as a subject, he saw me in the play. And he said he just started an outfit. Would I come and see them in OBS? On the Friday, I went to go see them. And it was cool. It was like mostly instrumental. He saw me and he invited me to come onto the stage and sing with them. And I did. And that was my first day with what would then become known as Fresh Day Grant.
Without any rehearsals.
2002. Without any rehearsals, yes.
Destiny.
It was.
That's what we call destiny. So would you...
I think so.
Is there any artist that you looked up to, like, when you were growing up? Like,
oh, tons.
Yeah?
You mean like internationally?
Yeah, just any artist.
Oh, I mean, certainly, you know, I grew up in the... I was born in 81, so when I was coming of age and sort of aware of popular music, it probably was... Yeah, towards the end of the 80s, early 90s, being very into all sorts of things from here, musicians like Brenda Fassie for sure. Musicians like Hugh Masekela for sure, Splash. You know, then later there was the Bongo Muffins.
Oh, yes.
You know, I mean, of course, you know, and then there was the other side, you know, then there was Motown.
Mm.
You know, there were the Manhattans, the Commodores, Stevie Wonder.
Oh, yeah.
And then I started getting interested in alternative music. I started listening to Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Smashing Pumpkins, all of
I love how you're trying to remember things. All of them, like, yes.
Yeah, Skunk and Nancy, as I mentioned. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so a mishmash, really.
Mm-hmm.
Really, and then, of course, as I was growing, I had a stepmom who was a sangoma, so we had a lot of traditional ceremonies that happened at our home. So really getting very deep into those, the roots of traditional Xhosa music.
Yeah.
So it was a whole beautiful mishmash.
Yeah, because you've had 16 years of experience in the industry, right? Is it
17?
17. Oh, that's amazing. Mm. And you've stayed true to who you are in your jazz sense, you know, and just your music and how you write, you know, and like in this world we live in now, it's like there's a lot of cultural imperialism where we're just taking things and outsourcing things from outside. But how do you check in with yourself? How do you say, okay, this, I recognize what's going on now, but I'm sticking to what I know. And
I don't know that that has always been true in my 17-year career. I think that I've always borrowed from the world and from everything. I mean, I think as a human, I speak for myself. I have, you know, I have borrowed from everything. I've done all sorts of things with my hair.
Mm-hmm.
I've done all sorts of things with my style. For me, it's just gotta feel. It's just gotta feel good to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then it doesn't have to be the same thing. It doesn't have to be the same look.
Yeah.
And I remember going, there were two points in my career where I got some flack, let's say, from the public. And one of those was when I started putting weaves in my hair.
Mm.
I love to play. So I loved playing around with like different kind of textures and colors. So I went through this massive patch where I played around with different colored weaves and styles that were like really radically unusual. But people thought that was not who I was supposed to be. I was supposed to hold up the flag of the natural girl, you know. Because that's what they had made up their minds that's who I was.
True.
And so I was not to step out of that box. And that was quite weird. and then the other thing was when I lost a lot of weight.
Mm.
Because I had openly said that I'm very happy with my weight with a song, Pot Belly.
Mm-hmm.
Which was very true at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Until I wasn't. You know? Yeah. I mean, I got to a stage where I was very much overweight. I'm very short. And I got to a point where there was just too much that was hanging on me to support my actual, you know, the proper function of my body. So I went on a radical journey to shed. And people took offense with that. I think for me, the lesson that I've taken from those two experiences is that you're never going to please everyone.
Yeah.
So stop trying.
Yeah, that is true.
You know?
No one's ever happy because they're not happy with themselves as well.
Yeah, so you know what I mean. So we just all gotta do what makes us happy, as long as we are not harming anyone.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it is, and it, And the only way that you're going to know that you're on the right track is if it really feels deeply within yourself, good and right and true.
Yeah. I think we can move on to self-love. Mm. I always love asking people, because I'm just on the search for different definitions of self-love. And I'm constantly redefining what self-love is for me. How would you say self-love is to you?
Mm. I might say different things on different days, but for now, I think it's like an appreciation of yourself.
Mm.
And it's like really seeing yourself. I've this year, I saw a woman who was a self-love coach.
Oh.
Faith Mayer is her name. Wonderful girl with this massive afro and huge smile. Incredible girl. But I realized that there was a disconnect. I had a disconnect with myself. Like, I had a fear of getting close to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And even, like, deeper, I couldn't see myself. I couldn't see myself. Like, I couldn't physically see who I was, like, physically. I couldn't see my face. And then even more to that, I couldn't, you know, I had the thing of the feelings of not knowing what I was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, what it has come to me now after doing that process is giving yourself the time to really connect with yourself, seeing yourself, appreciating and accepting yourself.
Mm.
All of that. Self-love.
Did you meet with the self coach before
before my show?
Yeah,
I did. Okay. That was a massive
yeah.
help towards making that show even a reality.
Yeah. And I just want to congratulate you on having a sold out show.
Thank you.
It was amazing. I remember I cried the first 10 minutes in when you sang Nombula. I was just in tears. And the lady sitting next to you was like, "Are you okay?" Because I just felt so nostalgic. Because my aunt got me the CD and she passed on like 2 years ago.
Sure, I'm sorry.
Thank you. So, I mean, and to hear that, oh, actually, this song relates to you, your personal story as well, you know, it's just like, whew, wow. You know, and then that's when I was like, I really need to talk to you, you know.
Oh, great. Yeah. And then you made it happen.
I made it happen. I stood out. I was like, I'm not leaving.
You made it happen. Well done.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you. Your music has really made my childhood. You have no idea.
Amazing.
Amazing
that I was able to be a part of that. Me and Freshly Ground.
Ground, yes.
For sure.
So thank
That's
you.
That's wonderful.
For that. And your story speaks about forgiveness, it speaks about release, it speaks about survival, it speaks about love as well. And I love how you ended it by saying that we are all accountable for our actions and we shouldn't go seeking help from the government, because at the end, we should be responsible for each other and what we hope to see in South Africa. And I think a lot of artists don't spread that message that often. What made you include that part in your play?
Well, a slight correction is that we can't solely rely on the government.
Mm.
You know, I mean, and certainly we can't use them as an excuse to be inactive. Or use their, whatever we perceive as their lack of fulfilling their mandate to stop us actually actively taking our personal lives,
mm-hmm.
our community, that of our country in our own hands, you know, and really having the agency of envisioning the South Africa that we want, the world, the kind of world that we want at large, and actually realizing that we have personal power.
Yeah.
You know, we so basically with my inclusion of sort of saying that we can't wait for Ramaphosa, you know, we can't wait for Ramaphosa to save us. It's easy for us to wait to be led, and if those leaders fail, then to just hold up our hands and say, "Well, look,
yeah,
what a mess."
Yeah.
Well, what are we gonna do about it? You know, it's this. This is our country. These are our lives. Yeah. This is our future.
And I always say there's one of him, and there's so many of us.
Absolutely.
How do you put so much power in the hands of just one or 12 people?
No.
And there's so
if
many
you,
of us.
Then if you also, and then I'm not saying that people must not be politically active, and I'm not saying that we don't need to hold our leaders to account.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is, There needs to be action on our part. We can't.
Absolutely.
You know, so if the action is holding them to account, then hold them to account. Don't just go to Australia. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then hold them to account. Then, you know what I mean? Don't just stay in your house and drink and beat your wife.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
And how do you perceive the world today as a black woman, as an artist, as a mother? Like, what kind of hopes do you have for your children?
I have a lot of hope.
Yeah.
I have so much hope. I'm full of hope.
That's great.
I'm full of hope. And I think that what I would like to do with my work going forward, and what I would have loved to have left people with the show, The One Who Sings, is a sense that once we take our own personal stories and our own personal lives on, you know, and sort of really be curious about our own stories and decide the direction that we want for our own stories, it becomes easier to be hopeful about the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once we all sort of standing in the middle of ourselves, it becomes that much easier for us to be an example for the next person. It becomes that much easier for us to see all of the things that we have overcome in our own stories that have made us these strong and brave individuals that we are, to see the power that we have to affect change not only in our own lives, but in our world at large. I think that's where the change happens. It starts at an individual level. It starts with your story, with my story.
Why do you think people are afraid to tell their stories?
Well, people are not only afraid to tell their stories, people are also afraid to look at their own stories.
Yeah.
You know, it's because we have been traumatized.
Yeah.
I mean, there are massive traumas in our country, certainly as black people.
Mm.
I mean, that is like right up there. Black nations have been, sure.
Yeah.
It's almost too big a word.
Yeah.
But we don't, because we don't live in isolation, you know, that trauma, it's ours, but it's not only ours. Have you ever been in a situation where you have used your power over somebody? Like, let's say you've bullied someone. I've been in a situation, all right? I've, you know, used my privilege or my power over somebody, it doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
Have you ever noticed?
Yeah.
How it really doesn't feel good.
You don't sleep at night.
So now imagine now you are born white in South Africa, you were told you are the master race, right? Your church tells you that, your schooling tells you that, the world really tells you that.
Yeah.
And it's normal, you know, you grow up, it's normal. Yes, you have this black maid and you love her, but you know, at the end, you know, like you're a million times better than her. And then, you know what, you get a bit older, then you start to actually have questions now. Now there are conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
Now you are an adult and there are there are real questions that in your being you can feel like, hang on, something is, this is not right, and yet I'm being told this, or I've believed this. There is a split that will happen in you.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people have dealt with that trauma by just shutting down.
Mm.
You know, it's the same story of what I have done. You know, that you just escape those feelings. You're just like, this is the way it is, and that's it. We put that in a box.
Mm.
So there's been trauma all across. You know, I'm talking colored people, I'm talking Indian, all of us in this land have serious trauma that we carry with us. There's that. And then there's just within families. You know what I mean? Just within families.
Mm.
Just within, as growing up, as from being a child growing up to being a teenager. There are traumas. There are all of these little things that sit in our bodies and that, like, you know, make us a little bit bent here and there, and they sit in our spirits and they kink. And so we all carry,
yeah,
these stories, you know, and it's hard to look at them, because at a certain point they become this monster. For me, that monster became raging alcoholism.
Mm.
You know, for me, the monster became not being able to look at my stuff to the extent where the thing that I was using as my medicine became my torturer. You know, became I couldn't survive a day without drinking alcohol. You know, and that was even with a tiny little baby.
Yeah. Coming on to that, now that you have conquered your addiction, how did you?
I don't know that I've conquered my addiction.
Okay, yeah.
It's like it's a daily process, and the funny thing with addiction is that it pops up in many different ways. So I might not be drinking, but that impulse to escape, that impulse is there. So I can do it in any number of ways. I can escape into my phone.
Mm.
You know, I can use my addiction in my phone. I can use my addiction with sex. I can use my addiction with food.
Mm.
You know, so I don't know if there's any such thing as like a conquered.
I think I said that because you've managed to talk about it.
Mm, okay, fully.
Yeah.
Love it.
Because, you know, as soon as someone can say it, it's like you've gone from the place of recognizing and accepting and trying to fix it.
100%.
Yeah, though I think I meant it from that perspective.
No, then I get you. I get you totally.
And so, you know, you make mention in the play that you then became a mother in the midst of your addiction.
Mm.
So when you found healing, when you found help, were there times when you reflected and felt guilty, you know, mommy guilt of yeah, because...
For sure.
Yeah. And how did you forgive yourself for those moments?
Good. Good question.
Yeah, because I have a 3-year-old son, and yeah, so I wasn't. Thank you. He's cute.
Sure.
And you know, I wasn't fully present in his. I was there, but I cannot tell you some of the things that happened because literally my mind blocked out a lot of moments. You know.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
Part of it being because I wasn't ready. So I have a lot of things blocked out, but now it's like I want to make up for it because now I'm in a better headspace, you know, and I'm just like constantly just making up for it the best way I know how to. And I'm still in the process of forgiving myself for not being fully present.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Okay, so can I say something to you?
Yeah.
Don't make up.
Okay.
That child doesn't need to feel as though you feel, doesn't need to feel your involvement as a heavy thing.
Mm.
You know?
Mm.
A child doesn't need to forgive you. A child knows you love that child. That child chose you.
Literally, yeah.
Right?
That's so true.
That child chose you, so now you just release it.
Mm.
Just release, and all you do now is you just love.
Yeah.
You love freely. you release yourself, there is no point to holding on.
I love that.
There is no point to holding on. Now you just imagine you've got these like cement bags that you're carrying around with you. Mm. It's only you now who's policing this. You're policing the holding of this now. You got this whip that is like holding these. Just let them go. There's so much life to live.
Yeah.
There's so much life to live.
There is.
We don't need to be, we don't need to be holding on.
That is so true. Yeah.
And you know what? It's actually as easy as just jumping into the sea and saying, I forgive myself. That's it. It's done. It's as easy as writing it on a piece of paper and burning it. It's done.
That's true.
It's done. It's done.
Yeah.
It's done.
How do you feel lighter?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's actually done.
Mm.
So I did feel a lot of guilt and anguish. It was mostly while I was in active addiction. Mm. Once I was out of it and once I was looking at my stuff and seeing, oh, this is where that action, that behavior comes from. Okay, and now I can see how that behavior, which is linked to this feeling about myself, plays out in all these different scenarios. So now I have awareness, and now I have choices.
Mm.
So once I have choices, I know that I can choose to hold on or I can choose to release. And I look at my children and I know I can see that they are free.
They're so happy.
I can see that they are free.
They are.
And I can see that when I was in active addiction and I was full of guilt and shame, there was a heaviness around my being with them, around my love, actually. Because it was like, it was like I really love you. I want to prove that I really, really love you. And it was actually too much. And they were pushing back in subtle ways.
Because kids know the most authentic love. Because they are the most authentic love.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
They just
love it when you just hang out with them. You know, they just love being in your company.
Yeah, that is so true. Would you consider yourself a passionate lover? Do you show your love in like hugs, kisses, or words?
Yeah, no, a touch is an important sense for me. Very important sense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember my mother. She died when I was between 6 and 7,
mm-hmm.
and you would think that I would have more memories of her because I was, you know, wasn't like super, super young, but I think the trauma of having lost her, my mind, to protect myself, you know, let go of most of my memories of her because it was just too painful.
Yeah.
But the memory, my biggest memory of is lying, like almost like in her arm, you know, and being with her, you know, she was teaching me something out, like coloring in between the lines, but that's not, the action is not important. What is important is the feeling of having me in her space, and there almost being no separation between me and her. So I feel like that was her teaching me the language of love, and for me the language of love is touch, and through actively saying I see you and I love you and I appreciate you to your kids and husband.
Yes. Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. I love that.
Mm.
As to mention of the last bit of your story, so I don't want to give away too much because the whole world still needs to see it. But you've also mentioned on your Instagram how you have been you're a survivor of sexual abuse.
Yes.
Yes. And you've urged a lot of women to come forward and tell their stories and
even if you just tell a person.
Yeah.
Just to get it out of you. So many, like me, I mean, I didn't say for 30 years, you know, that my stepbrother abused me.
Mm-hmm.
30 years, I'm 38. I was 8 when it started.
Yeah.
And I know that some women go their whole lives and they don't say. And it's, for me, the I don't know what your question was. Sorry, I just jumped
it's
in
okay.
there. But like, for me, the value of me as a, as a public, as a person in the public eye, to say, this happened to me, and there is life after, there is beautiful life after, is that there's still so much, there is so much shame.
Yeah.
There's so much shame around saying that I was hurt in this way, in a sexual way, in an intimate way. Mm. Because it is so intimate. You know, it is your person. Your person becomes, feels as though it is damaged and tainted.
Mm.
It's the center of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that that is a big part of why it's so difficult for so many of us to say that I was hurt in this way. And then, of course, that not being able to express, we find ways then of coping with this secret.
Yeah.
And these ways are by and large quite unhealthy.
Yeah.
So for me, the benefit of me saying so is to say that, look, this happened to me. You know me. You know?
The girl who sings.
Yeah. I'm the girl who sings, and I am living my life, and I've got this beautiful family, and you know, but this is also a part of my story, and it is very hard. It is a very hard part of my story, and but it is. And it is a part of my journey. And there's nothing wrong with you for having had experienced that.
Yeah.
It's so not your fault.
Absolutely.
Release it. Even if you tell one person, one trustworthy person, pick your people. And if that's not the right person, fine. Find another one. Find that person that you can share this with.
Yeah.
You don't have to carry it alone, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, that's true. And would you say forgiveness played a role in you transitioning from being a victim to seeing yourself as a conqueror?
Yeah. You know, I see it more as compassion, but yes, it is part of the same thing, because I look back now and I look at my stepbrother, who was only like, I mean, he can only have been about 5 or 6 years older than me. If I was 8 when it started, 12, let's say he was, I have a sense that he must have been like 13 when it started, like 13 to 16, let's say. When I look back and I think about him, to me, he seemed a very unhappy person. Unhappy child. And I will never excuse what he did, because we have a moral compass. We know, you know, somewhere along the line, we know. But I think something must have happened to him.
Yeah.
We know that he would want to offload his pain, his shame, whatever it was. So I think it's been amazing to come to a point of being able to see him in a compassionate light, and that has really helped me also to realize the humanity of it all.
Yeah.
My humanity, his humanity, the humanity of my stepmother, who was emotionally and verbally abusive, and sort of gave me an idea of myself as somebody who was not of much worth.
Mm.
I can look back now and I can think, I don't know that she meant to do that. I don't know that that's what she meant to do. I do know, knowing what I know now, that I could never be like that, and I could never be like that because I love myself.
I like that.
You know, and so most likely she wasn't in a position where she could love herself.
Yeah.
You know, when you act out like that, when you you are in pain.
Yeah.
So it's not even a it's not really about forgiveness. It's compassion for me.
Yeah.
You know, and that helps with releasing the thing. Release.
To wrap it up, what? Just a short message to the 8-year-old Zolani, knowing what you know now, feeling what you feel now.
Yeah.
What would you tell her if she were to read it somewhere or to listen to this podcast? Which is the shortest words.
I would say to her, you are innocent.
Mm-hmm.
You are beautiful. You are worthy. You are lovable. You are loved. You have permission to feel.
I love that. Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
I have one more thing that I want to say.
Okay, say it.
What I want to say is, you know, I'm so interested in this notion of releasing or taking off things that are no longer necessarily a part of our story.
Mm-hmm.
I think as humans, the consequences of our sort of just living unconsciously have an effect on our planet.
Yes.
Are having visible effects on our planet. They're having visible effects on our societies at large. Whether we're here in South Africa, whether we are in America, whether we are in France. We're nearing the end of a decade. Sorry, you putting this out in 2020. We are beginning a new decade. It's 2020.
Yeah.
2020 vision. There are very conscious choices that we can make now on the things that we want to take off. Take off as individuals. Take off as a nation, take off as a species, so that we can move forward consciously into a future that we want to create. Mm. The point of letting go of all of these things that are no longer a real part of our story, the part of our story that we want to take forward into the future, the point of taking them off is that we can be free to receive the power to move on into the next.
Mm.
We've got to put them down.
Yeah.
Put down those cement blocks.
Love it.
Put down. Put down.
Take it off. I need a song from you about that. I mean, we'll hear it probably. It's in a song.
I actually have written a song and I will release it in the beginning of this. I will release it in the beginning of this year. It's called Izitlango.
I love it.
It's called Shoes.
I did it in the play.
So this song is it's about the things that have been passed down to us by our mothers.
Oh.
By our partners, things that aren't actually a part of our story anymore. Ziya disogolisa, lezizihlango
lizithengelwe ngumama. Ah, love it.
Ziya disogolisa, lezizihlango lizithengelwe ngumama. Kodwa ndiyode ndifike, ndiyode ndifike mdaka mama. Kodwa ndiyode ndifike. Dio den figem daga mama.
Oh, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure, Cindy.
Can I call you Zozo from now on?
No, because it's confusing to me.
Why?
It's confusing to me because the only people who call me Zozo are my dad.
Okay.
Oh, and okay. Some members of my family. So it's okay. Very disorienting for people for me to hear people call me Zo or Zozo.
Okay, Sisolani.
I love it. I love it.
Because I have people often like Zo. And I was like, you actually sound. And people on Instagram like to refer to you as Zo. I was like, yeah. I actually like Sisolani. It is. Thank you so much. You literally made my dream come true. You giving me the nod meant so much. I went back home and I told my housemate that.
Yeah.
She said, yeah, because I literally, after I bought the ticket, I was like, guys, I'm going to ask her to be on my podcast.
Yeah.
And you giving me the nod and telling me that you love even the name of my podcast.
Absolutely.
Made me so happy. It was like the nod I needed from the universe and God. I promise you. Yes. So.
You went for it and you made it happen.
Yes.
Yay.
Thank you so
Talk
much.
Talk about conscious creating.
All the best.
All the best.
On your journey.
Thank
on your
you.
Solo career.
And you.
It's going to be amazing. From that one play, I have so much faith and belief in you. And trust me, I will be in all your plays that you are going to produce.
And come to my gigs.
Gigs. Yes, of course, of course. I'm also going to come to your gigs.
Thank you so much. You're Maybe. A pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, just right on time.
Oh, Walter.
Right on.